This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Now Bonds distributes food four times a week in front of the Houston Public Library on McKinney near Smith on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 7 p.m. Food Not Bombs is seeking volunteers to cook, share meals, pick up food, and help clean plates. We accept donations of large cooking pots, reusable plates, bowls, utensils, and non-perishable foods such as dry beans, rice, and canned vegetables. If you're interested in volunteering or you'd like more information, please come out to where we share food. You can find us at facebook.com/HoustonFoodNotBombs or email us at fnbhouston@riseup.net.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites MySpace and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. On Facebook, for example, you can connect to KPFT as a friend, join our fan page, and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley to Facebook users, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFTHouston to join us. On MySpace, KPFT provides event videos, updates, and a lot more. Visit myspace.com/KPFTHouston to add KPFT as a friend. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFTHouston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFTHouston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio and KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jack Valinsky.
Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, our Washington correspondent David Elliott will be joining us to report on the benefits of the new health care legislation that President Obama signed into law recently. Unfortunately, we do not have news wrap this week because of technical problems on the sending end. However, the Equality Texas Foundation is hosting its biennial State of the State Public Policy Conference Saturday, April 17th at the Legislative Conference Center, and that's at the Texas State Capitol Building in Austin. Attendance is free and includes a full day of panel discussions on policy issues in Texas. Bob Scarmondo, the chairman of the Board of Directors of Equality Texas, will be here to tell us more about that. In our second hour, did you know that it is perfectly legal in Texas to fire somebody because of their sexual orientation or gender identity and expression? Currently, only 12 states and the District of Columbia protect LGBT employees from discrimination. A nationwide coordinated effort is being made to pressure lawmakers to pass ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Daniel Williams from Equality Across America will join us to discuss progress on ENDA. And Deborah Bell, one of the voices of Queer Voices, will join us again after a long absence. She is now the editor of the Montrose Gem, a biweekly newspaper for and about the local community. She'll be here to tell us about the Gem and what's going on in her life. And we're also going to have some other stuff that we haven't figured out yet because we don't have This Way Out.
Well, we'll just have to... Let's have to stretch.
Well, first of all, I want to say a get well to Jennifer Renee, who went home sick. She came to the radio station but not feeling well enough, so we'll give her the night off. We have a number of things going on this week, so we wanted to sort of...
I want to say something about bunnies on the bayou yesterday. If you were there, from what I understand, it was a record-breaking attendance. That number's to be confirmed, but what a tremendous crowd and a tremendous event for the community. And yes, Jack, there are a lot of things going on this week. Starting tomorrow, the GOBT Political Caucus is having a happy hour at 13 degrees Celsius on Caroline Street. Followed by a meeting the next day. Go to thecaucus.org for more information. Thursday, we're having the Pride group is having their grand marshal announcement, so don't miss that. 6:30 to 9:30, Momentum Audi on Richmond Avenue. And then on Saturday, they have the GOBT Community Center is having the Community Leaders event at 3400 Montrose at Hawthorne, Suite 207, Saturday 1 to 5 p.m. And all this week we have early voting, right, Jack?
Yes, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And there's not that many people to vote for, and we do not give out endorsements, but you can find them at certain websites if you'd like to follow them or just vote your conscience.
Or in to find out where you need to vote, go to harrisvotes.org to find your polling place for early voting.
Yes, the regular early voting locations, although occasionally they do switch one or two out. So there's 37 in the county of Harris, and then there's other ones in the other counties.
Just go to West Gray.
Is that it?
That's all we have.
So now with us is David Elliott. He's calling in from Washington, who gives us a monthly update on things that are going on. Good evening, David.
Well, good evening to you, Jack, and good evening, Queer Voices. Good evening, KPFT. I hope y'all are doing really, really well.
Well, and, you know, after the health care has been passed, I mean, what else? Life is wonderful, isn't it?
Well, not quite yet, Jack. But, you know, I do want to take you back. I want to take you back to July 2008. That's about 21 months ago, almost 2 years. A massive coalition called Healthcare for America Now, on one day in July 2008, held 52 press conferences across the country. And we announced on that day what would become a $43 million effort to pass comprehensive health care reform. And, Jack, our idea at the time, our idea of reform would be based on what I call the three A's: affordability for the consumer, accessibility to health care for those who are currently uninsured, and accountability for insurance companies. And you know these insurance companies, they've gouged consumers, they've given us shockingly high premium increases, they've denied us our health care when we get sick, and now, as of late last month, as you noted, health care reform has passed Congress, and President Obama has signed it into law. Healthcare reform is coming our way. Healthcare reform is here to stay. So, tonight, I want to take a look at three things. First, what did we accomplish, and was it good or bad? Second, what things in the bill take effect this year? In other words, what can help Americans right away? And third, what comes next? How can we build on this victory, assuming that the listener even agrees with me that it was a victory? So let's tackle the first question first. What did we pass? Was it good, bad, or somewhere in between? You know, Jack, I've heard two primary criticisms of this bill. First, I've heard that it represents socialism, a government takeover of our healthcare system. And second, I've heard that it represents a massive giveaway to the insurance companies, corporate welfare, if you will. Now, logically, both of these things simultaneously cannot be true. One cannot be a socialist and a corporate stooge at the same time. I mean, that would be like morphing Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders into Texas Senator John Cornyn. It just can't be done. But some on the left have criticized the legislation as it does require those who do not have health insurance to buy it from private companies. Now, I don't have any problem with what is called the individual mandate. After all, we all should have insurance, and it should be a shared responsibility. The individual, the government, and employers, all of those should share in this responsibility. But there should have been a public option in the legislation, and there is not one. There is not one in the bill that was passed. That is an entirely valid criticism and one that we must address going forward. But let's talk a minute about some good, some historic good that was accomplished in this bill. With President Obama's signature, we have extended public health care in America to 16 million Americans who currently go without it. And any way you look at it, that is a straight-up, undeniable, progressive victory. Basically, that's a sweeping expansion of Medicaid, almost but not quite, public insurance for low-income Americans. Also, because of a little-noticed provision inserted into the legislation by the aforementioned Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, who indeed is the socialist, we are going to expand funding of community health centers by $11 billion over the next 4 years. That money will aid an additional 18 million low-income Americans a year. And that, my friends, is progress at its core. Now, let me shift gears a little bit here and address my second question. What benefits exactly will Americans be able to see right away, you know, this year, not waiting, you know, for a couple of more years, because we know that the full effect of the health care reform legislation isn't going to go into effect until 2013, 2014. What can we see immediately? Well, immediately we can see no denials for pre-existing conditions for people under 19. We can see more young adults insured. Parents will be allowed to keep their children on their health insurance plan until the kids turn 26. And indeed, Jack, I have to tell you, this is going to be, like, between now and November, the biggest effect that is seen. It's going to affect about 4 million people. We can see broader coverage. In the next 3 months, people who have been locked out of the insurance market because of a pre-existing condition will become eligible for coverage. We can see bans on lifetime caps. All insurance plans will be barred from imposing lifetime caps on coverage. Insurance companies will no longer be able to cancel insurance retroactively. Prescription drugs, this is another biggie. The 4 million Medicare beneficiaries with prescription drugs so high that they are not fully covered are going to get a $250 rebate. That's going to come about September. We're going to see tax credits for small businesses. Small businesses will no longer be forced to choose between offering health care and hiring new employees. They'll be able to get up to 35% of premiums in terms of tax credits to help insure their employees. And then we're going to see a regulation requiring insurance companies to hold down premiums. Companies are going to have to report how much they spend on Medicare cost versus administrative costs. And we're going to be able to look at how much they're spending on actually treating people as opposed to how much they're spending on administrative costs. Now, what comes next? Because that's my third question. We've just laid the foundation for what I think will one day, not today, but one day, will be the most important social reform legislation of our time.
You know, David, it's really interesting how you're talking about this, and a lot of us really progressive people are rather disappointed in what we did get. On the other hand, I think we got to realize that it is an incredible first step. knowing how hard the fight has been, knowing that it has been failed ever since, and maybe if LBJ didn't get caught in that war in the 60s, he might have been able to pull it off back then. But it is so important that we do make this first step, because doing nothing, with just even people who do have insurance, the co-payments are going up, the coverage is being less, and it's just so disappointing to see these people just be so upset over this. And in fact, you know, the government is in a lot of different parts of what we do in our economy as sort of a safety net, and that's so important that we have at least this first step.
Well, you know, Jack, let me, if I may, offer up a quote that, you know, let me back up a minute. A couple of Sundays ago, we were facing this incredibly historic vote. It was Sunday, I think it was March 20th, 21st, a beautiful spring day in Washington. A spring day that here in Washington was full of tension, because we had 200,000 people here demonstrating in favor of immigration reform, which, by the way, is tied into health care reform. But we also had a few hundred Tea Party protesters who were yelling anti-gay and racist slogans at members of Congress. You probably remember the coverage from that day. And, you know, I want to say a couple of things about what Nancy Pelosi, you know, the Speaker of the House, said right before the vote took place on health care reform. You know, she went to the well of the House, and you know, she quoted a former Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, who said, "All politics is local." And Jack, do you remember that phrase?
Yes, yes.
And then she said, "And I say to you tonight that when it comes to health care for all Americans, all politics is personal." And she went on to tell a couple of really personal stories that she had heard, that I don't think that time really allows me to tell those stories, but I want to make the connection right here, right now, Jack, between healthcare reform, coverage for everybody, and the next great civil rights movement of our time, which is the need for jobs, the need for jobs for everybody. And listen to me for a minute as I continue to quote Speaker Pelosi for a second. Quote, "We all know, and it has been said over and over again, that our economy needs something new, a jolt. And I believe that this legislation, that is the health care reform legislation, will unleash tremendous entrepreneurial power into our economy. Imagine a society and an economy where a person could change jobs without losing health insurance, where they could be self-employed or start a small business. Imagine an economy where people could follow their passions and their talent without having to worry that their children would not have health insurance, that if they had a child with diabetes who is bipolar or with pre-existing medical conditions in their family, that they would be job-locked. Under this bill, their entrepreneurial spirit will be unleashed." And that's part of what this is all about. It is not a perfect health care reform bill. Oh, my God. God, if we could have passed that. But it was probably not just the best that we could do, because that would be, I think, undercounting it a little bit, but I think a little bit revolutionary. I think probably the best thing that we've done going all the way back to the mid-1960s.
Yes. Yes. I don't know what to add to that, David. I mean, that's the great, great synopsis.
But here's what's next, Jack. We've got to defend it.
Yes,
We've got to defend it. Republicans, conservatives are saying they want to base the November elections, subsequent elections, on repealing health care reform. So, what does that mean exactly? Do they want to take us back to the era of pre-existing conditions? Do they want to take us back to the era of where young adults, you know, people who graduate from college and can't get jobs, can't be on their parents' plans? Do they want to take us back up to the era where seniors who are having trouble paying for their prescription drugs can't get that $250 rebate? Do they want us to take us back there? Or are we going to move forward and are we going to agree to a vision, agree to an idea that maybe, you know what, in an advanced country like America, we should take care of each other.
Right.
We should
yes.
take care of each other.
Right. Well... And then we've got so many other issues to deal with, and it's taken so much energy to get, you know, to where we are in this. And you know, I do have to give Nancy Pelosi a lot of credit for, you know, keeping the House in the line and working together with the House.
And Jack, I have to tell you a secret. Well, I mean, maybe it's not that big of a secret, but she went to the White House. And she met with Obama and Rahm Emanuel and Harry Reid, and they started suggesting that maybe we should do something a little bit more conservative on health care reform. And Pelosi looked at them, and she said, quote, oh, you mean kitty care?
Well, good for her. Good for her.
Nancy Pelosi is the hero of our generation. I never would have believed it. I mean, I didn't either,
to be honest with you, David. And, you know, she was down here about 8 months ago in Houston, and she does have a connection to Houston because I believe her sister lives here or one of her family members live here. And when I heard her speak, I wasn't overly impressed, but I look at the results of the, you know, of what she has accomplished, and you got to give her a lot of credit for that.
Oh, yeah, Jack, I realize that we've never elected a Speaker of the House president. At least I don't think we have. But if, you know, 8 years, you know, 6 years from now, you know, let's hope that 2 years from now, President Obama gets reelected, right?
Yes.
But then, like, 4 years after that, if Nancy Pelosi was running for president, I would resign my job, I would go to Iowa, I would go to New Hampshire, I would say, okay, I'm going to work for you for free. Tell me what you want me to do.
Yes, exactly. Well, David, you know, it's a really good report, and it's also interesting that, you know, watching CNN, which apparently their ratings keep going down and down and down, and maybe one of the reasons is that they don't do news anymore, but as they talked about this, they are mostly talking about the horse race. Is it going to pass? Is it not? But actually knowing what was in the bill, they didn't talk very much about that. You talked a lot more about it, and I learned a lot more from your talk than I did by watching hours and hours and hours worth of CNN or the other networks.
Well, Jack, I did that for a purpose, and here's the deal. The November elections are going to be decided based upon our ability. And I'm not talking about the media's ability. I'm not talking about the newspaper's ability, because we can't count on the Houston Chronicle or the Dallas Morning News or the Austin American Statesman or the Associated Press or whatever.
Well, David, though, I do have to say they're still better than watching CNN or the some of the other cable networks.
Well, yeah, you do. Local media is better. You're right.
Well, the newspaper is better, not necessarily radio in general.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal. We will win or lose in November based on our ability to explain to the American public what health care reform does for them. And it does a whole lot of things. I mean, really the most important thing is the 3 to 4 million American parents, 3 to 4 million people out there, a number of whom are listening right now, right here, who are going to be able to put their kids on their health insurance plan, and they're not going to have to worry about them anymore. And we're going to have to tell the other stories also. And in fact, I'm involved in an effort right now to bring build a story bank. If any of your listeners have stories about how health care reform is going to help you, please email them to me. You can email them to me at stories, S-T-O-R-I-E-S, at usaction, all one word, .org.
Well, David, thank you again for giving us this great report, and we really appreciate it because we, you know, it's hard to get this anywhere else. And I know how hard you and your organization has been working on this because it is so important. And today, hearing that announcement that we may have another Supreme Court judge, leaving, we don't know when, but that's a possibility. So that's going to be another battle that may be up in the air. But all these battles are so important, and it's really important that people really learn the issues because you don't always know what they truly are.
Well, thank you very much, Jack, and you're right about that Supreme Court battle. That's going to hit us in about 3 months.
Right. Well, David, you gave your information. David Elliott calls us almost every first Monday of the month to give us an update on what's going on in Washington and how it affects us all around in our community. David, thank you.
Thank you for having me, Jack. Good night.
And you're listening to Career Voices, and we're going to actually take a break now. Glenn, take it away.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites MySpace and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. On Facebook, for example, you can connect to KPFT as a friend, join our fan page, and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley to Facebook users, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFTHouston to join us. On MySpace, KPFT provides event videos, updates, and a lot more. Visit myspace.com/KPFTHouston to add KPFT as a friend. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFTHouston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFTHouston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio and KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
Give me another month.
That's okay, I'm just asking. And we're back here. We're having a little bit problems of getting this way out this week, and we're sort of working on that. We haven't given up. Glenn hasn't given up.
It's not a problem. It's a challenge.
It's a challenge, yes.
Well, this is Brian Lewinka.
And this is Rob Scamardo.
And Rob, you are with
Equality Texas.
And what is Equality Texas?
First of all, let me clarify. I'm the chairman of the board of directors of Equality Texas. And Equality Texas is the only GLBT advocacy group that is focused in the state of Texas exclusively.
Now, why do we care about focusing on the state? We have national and we have local. Why state?
Well, because a lot of the laws and policies which affect you and our lives, your life and my life, are determined in Austin. And that sometimes people don't realize that important things such as relationship recognition or welfare of children, those sorts of things, are totally governed by state law.
I did not know that. Well, I didn't know that, but I'm trying to sound like I didn't. But it's
I knew you knew that.
Well, and hopefully our listeners now know that and know that it is important what happens in Austin.
Absolutely.
That, you know, things happen here, but things, laws are made in Austin for the state, and they tend to govern our personal lives.
Absolutely. And a way that it is sometimes people don't realize how many decisions do impact us that are made in Austin. Everything from particularly relationship recognition, marriage, family, all those issues are totally governed by state law.
Yes, and I think that affects a lot of people and they just don't realize it. And maybe, you know, as Texans, we're kind of bred to think that, you know, we'll never have that. But I think change is coming, and I think if we have any chance, it's in the next couple of years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people often ask me, why are you involved in Equality Texas? And what
Let me ask you, Rob, why are you involved with Equality Texas?
Well, since you asked,
that's a good question.
I thought you'd like it.
Yes.
I'm a native Texan.
You are.
And I care very much about Texas, and I really hope to see that one day Texas will be a state where everyone is treated equally with dignity and respect. And I have a friend in New York City who said when I told him I was involved, elected to the board of directors of Equality Texas, says, equality in Texas? It'll never happen. Well, I think it can.
I think it can, too.
I believe if we all start thinking that way, we can make it happen.
Now, we can think that way, but what actions do we need to do? How can the local listener here in Houston make a difference and make change in Austin? What can we do?
Well, there are a number of different things. I think people need to get more engaged about what actually is the state of the law in Texas, and they need to take more opportunities to understand how they might have an ability to impact that law. It's amazing how many people, sadly, including elected officials, don't realize that in the state of Texas, you can be terminated from employment simply because of your sexual orientation or your gendered identity and expression.
That's a sad but true fact.
It's a sad but true fact. And there are other areas in which people do not fully appreciate what the impact of the current law is in Texas and how that can change in Austin. What we hope to do by our efforts is to give people opportunities to become more familiar and to be more engaged on the local and state level.
Now, how does one find out about current legislation that's up in Austin that's being looked at and could possibly become a law? I mean, how do we know what's going on in Austin from a legislation perspective?
Well, from the general overall perspective, first of all, you have to remember the legislature only meets every other year, mm-hmm. in odd number of years, and only for 6 months generally. With respect to what we call our equality agenda, I mean, equalitytexas.org is the place that we would refer people to understand what our legislative agenda is, what our priorities are, and we keep people updated with what bills have been introduced to advance that legislation.
Now, I understand there's an event coming up, a conference, so to speak.
Exactly.
To get us more involved with the state of the state.
So. Right, right. We call it, it's a biennial. We have every other year in the even number years when the legislature is not in session, State of the State Public Conference. And what it does, and this year it's going to be Saturday, April 17th, at the state capitol from 9 to 4. And what the conference does is to give participants, attendees, an opportunity to hear firsthand from state legislators, from experts in certain fields, and from committed activists what the issues are that are at play that we have a likelihood of having some positive impact on by our active engagement in.
So the squeaky wheel could get the grease if we go there and we make our voices known and our opinions and our struggles?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, in 2009, we had over 400 people attend our lobby day, which is our annual mm-hmm. event when the legislature is in session. And several legislators commented after that day and more particularly to our staff afterwards, how impactful it was to see the GLBT community walking the halls of the legislature, letting legislators know that we're here and we expect to be listened to.
Well, we're here and we're queer and we're talking to you.
Exactly.
And I'm sure they hear from the ultra-right side all the time, the religious right, you know, how Texas should be this conservative bastion of hope for the U.S. and I guess how our voice is not very much heard.
Well, I mean, I think that there is certainly some of that, but I think what we have seen is that there's definitely a demographic shift occurring in Texas. I mean, most notably, many people would have never expected Anise Parker as an out lesbian being able to be elected in Houston.
In Houston,
crazy. Texas. Who would have ever thunk it?
I know.
But it happened.
It did happen.
We saw other changes happened in the election of 2008 that indicated that perhaps a more open-minded, progressive, if we want to use that word, to certain issues was possible.
You know, and I think that follows the population trends in Texas. Texas is becoming very quickly a very urban state where most of the people live in the cities, and that's the fastest growing counties in Texas. So I think maybe the progressive mindset is reaching out to the whole state.
Hopefully. Right. Let's hope so. And, you know, here in Texas, in Houston particularly, we are really fortunate to have some of the most vocal and reliable advocates in the legislature for the equality agenda. I mean,
name some names so our listeners know.
Our listeners should know the names of Garnett Coleman,
yes.
Jessica Farrar,
mm-hmm.
Sinfronia Thompson, Ellen Cohen, those names everyone should recognize as pillars, if you will. And we are so excited that Sinfronia Thompson and Garnett Coleman are going to be part of our State of the State Public Policy Conference coming up on April 17th. I mean,
yes.
Sinfronia Thompson is one of the senior members of the House, I think the longest serving woman. A current serving woman, I don't know historically, but currently she's been in the legislature for a number of years and is recognized as one of the very forceful voices for equality and progressive issues. In 2005, when she took the floor of the House of Representatives and spoke very eloquently against the prejudice that was in the anti-marriage amendment. Garnett
mm-hmm.
Coleman
yes.
has always been one of the people we've looked to and relied upon for his leadership in the House. Both of those representatives, as well as Mark Strama and Donna Howard from the Austin area, will be participating in our public policy conference on the 17th.
Now, what do you hope to get out of this conference? I mean, what is the end game? What are we ultimately, or what's realistic at this point?
Well, I think what's realistic is we hope to get as many people there as possible.
Okay, so listeners, that means you.
That's exactly right. It's a free conference. Free there is no cost to you. Breakfast and lunch are provided. So it's an opportunity to go meet other activists, more importantly, to learn more about the issues. And so what we would love to do is have, you know, I'd love to see 300 to 400 people there who are really becoming fully engaged in the process and can take it forward so that what we ultimately hope to do is to fashion and shape our legislative agenda for the next legislature in 2011.
So the odd number year for the next session.
Exactly. So this is sort of, it's foundational, laying the groundwork, if you will, for what we hope to be
kind
able
of
to achieve.
It's the activist network to kind of get across the state. And do y'all work with local organizations to kind of pull people in, or you just kind of go statewide to recruit people?
Oh, no. We have a network of organizations that we partner with on the local level. I mean, here in Houston, the GLBT Political Caucus is one of, you know, people that we regularly engage with.
Mm-hmm.
There have been very exciting events in this current year, 2009, and in 2010 and happening in municipalities in Fort Worth and in El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
One of the plenary sessions that is going to be part of the day is going to be called Our Town, What You Can Make Happen in Your Municipality.
Hmm.
And we'll have representatives from Fort Worth and Houston, San Antonio on that panel to talk about what's the political landscape in your municipality and what you possibly can affect.
Right, and I think El Paso and Fort Worth kind of in 2009 saw some of maybe the less open-mindedness? I mean...
No, just the opposite. In 2009...
I was talking about the raid in Fort Worth and then the couple that was kissing in El Paso and they got a...
Well, interestingly, yeah, there were events which were prejudicial and discriminatory right. towards people in our community. However, it was able... Those events both catapulted and motivated change for the positive.
Absolutely. I think that's the essence of change is a reaction to some event.
Exactly. I think that while there were some people that acted that way in Fort Worth, the police particularly, the city of Fort Worth chose to take a pretty bold step in expanding its protections, non-discrimination protections against people in the city of Fort Worth based upon sexual orientation and gender identity.
So out of this incident, some good legislation and change has come.
Absolutely.
We have our guest with us, Randall Terrell, I believe, is on the line with us.
I have been, yeah. Thank you.
Hi, Randall. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Can you all hear me now?
We can.
I've heard most of what you said. Where are you now in the conversation?
We were talking about the conference, and I guess now... for our listeners, what is your role with Equality Texas?
I've got two roles, I guess, for our nonprofit foundation, which is the education organization. I'm the policy director. And then on the political side, I'm the political director for our advocacy organization.
So I guess explain to our listeners what's the difference between the nonprofit and the advocacy side?
Oh, it's all tax code for the most part. We're a nonpartisan organization, but we have two different bodies, really. One of which exists for education and research, and the other which is exists for advocacy. And Rob is involved with the advocacy arm.
That's the 501c4.
Yes, correct. It is.
Okay, versus the 501c3.
Correct.
Yes.
I see. So
we work in tandem together to achieve the same objective. The foundation focuses more on the educational, engaging people to become aware of the issues and the current state of the law, which is the entity that's actually sponsoring this conference.
Ah, so, okay.
And so the foundation then will sponsor the conference, and then from that, we will take the information to shape the legislative agenda that Equality Texas will use as our advocacy.
And the reason for all the complication, of course, is we're trying to use the dollars that people donate to us as effectively and efficiently as possible.
Absolutely. So what is your role in the upcoming conference, Randall?
Oh, I do a couple of things. I've been inviting speakers. I've been in arranging for speakers. I actually am moderating one panel, and I'm appearing on at least one other panel as well in terms of what the political landscape in Texas looks like.
Can we talk about those panels, or is that on the website?
It's on the website, but we can talk about them now.
Yeah, let's give a taste for our listeners. What can they expect?
Okay. We have some interesting ones. We have Best Interest of the Child, which is parenting policy, where we talk about things like adoption, birth certificates. Because if you're a same-sex couple, you cannot get both your names on your kid's birth certificate right now.
I did not know that.
No, it's an obscene sort of quirk of Texas law that we're working to change. Wow. Everybody who knows it thinks it's bad, but we're just trying to get it changed now once we can get the momentum to do that.
And we did have momentum on that issue in the last legislative session.
Absolutely.
Where there were several legislators, when confronted with that issue, said, well, that's absurd.
Why would you not want to have both adoptive parents on the birth? I don't
it's typical bashing and baiting that allows certain parties to turn out their conservative base.
Yeah.
And truthfully, it's just a little one word in the family code that says that on the birth certificate shall be one father male, one mother female. And so the Bureau of Vital Statistics will not issue birth certificates, even to people who have adopted their kids in Massachusetts and are legally married.
Wow. That straight up discrimination in my book.
Straight up.
And then we've got a panel on diversity and equality and justice in diverse communities. We've got one called Friends with Benefits, which is the ally agenda, and how if you are an ally, not LGB or T, but just an ally, how you can be effective and why people should be involved in the movement.
You mean our straight allies that are out there fighting for us?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
And we got one on safe schools called Reading, Writing, and Bullying, which is where we've been getting a lot of traction. We actually got our bill to the floor last session, and it was tagged to pass the House floor. And we had a Senate sponsor all lined up. It died, unfortunately, because of chubbing, delays on other bills. That's tagged as the Safe Schools Bill to go forward next session.
What's interesting, Randall, is that finally you all are working in a proactive mode instead of a reactive mode.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I heard Rob, before it got lost in phone Neverland, I heard Rob talking about how we've been on defense in the past, we're moving forward to offense and trying to be, and there's a demographic shift coming. And it's not just urban versus rural, because there's a lot of support in rural communities as well. It's young versus old, and it's the attrition of people, the old ideas and stereotypes and prejudices that are falling away. I call it the Will and Grace effect.
I call it the queer as folk effect, where there's just this kind of society mind opening and kind of acceptance, kind of a very large general scale, and I think...
Yes, but on the other hand, with the Texas textbooks, you sort of wonder how they could learn some of these things.
Oh, absolutely. That's another way. And we're working with the coalition to try to change some of the tax standards, the TEEC standards, that are coming up and going to be revised in the next few weeks as well.
Well, I think there's a small group, narrow-minded group, that has control of that particular group that I think is not representative of what we're seeing as in terms of the demographic shift. And I just want to tie up, Jack, you made a great point in that how in 2009 we were on the offensive, we weren't being defensive, and in large part I think the numbers of people that showed up at the Capitol for Lobby Day really was instrumental in making that happen. I mean, I got to have hats off to our staff. Randall and our former executive director were wonderful in terms of working the legislature, but the presence of GLBT community there was instrumental.
That's absolutely true. And the one point I'd like to make to your listeners in particular is there are a couple of things you can do. Come to our policy conference. You can register for it on our events page, equalitytexas.org. Click on events, you can find our policy conference, and we can tell you how to get involved and brief you on the issues. We also have an advocacy center, which is, come on, sign up. You get an email every couple of weeks, but we tell you what you can do. And when you sign up and give us your address, we know whose district you're in. So if I have a particularly problematic elected official, I can send out an email just to those people in his district or her district and generate heat for that elected official. And the more people I have in the more districts, the more pressure we can put on the legislature or local elected officials, and the more we can get done.
I want to give a shout out to our sponsors, without whom support we wouldn't be able to put this conference together. Out of Austin, the law firm McGinnis, Lockridge, and Kilgore is our presenting sponsor. Locally, Moore and Hunt have stepped up to sponsor the Best Interest of the Child panel, and Haynes and Boone is sponsoring the Workplace Discrimination panel. So we're grateful for those people. As I mentioned, the conference is free. We do require people to register so we know how much breakfast and lunch to have.
What's the website for that? For information about the conference,
it's www.equalitytexas.org, and it's under events, State of the State Public Policy Conference. The other thing is we are having a cocktail reception on the evening before.
Oh.
If anybody's planning on being in Austin for the conference and wants to come in Friday afternoon, you can get information about that also on the website or contacting the staff, particularly Lindsay, Lindsay. At EqualityTexas.org or Allison, Allison, at EqualityTexas.org. Or,
what about you? Can they contact you?
They can contact me, Rob Scamardo at EqualityTexas.org, absolutely. I won't be as helpful to them as Allison or Lindsay will be, but we'll help them out.
Rob, is there anything else you want our listeners to know?
We certainly hope to see you in Austin. April 17th, Saturday week, from 9 to 4. We guarantee it'll be a great conference, and you'll have an impact on shaping equality in Texas.
Thank you very much.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Is burning bright. This is what it feels like when two become one, yeah. Marshall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending April 3rd, 2010. Hungary's constitutional court has upheld the nation's same-gender registered partnership law. It grants registered partners most of the rights of marriage, but denies them access to adoption and assisted reproduction and the right to take a spouse's last name. Conservative forces, including the Christian Democratic People's Party, the Society for Christian Physicians in Hungary, the Pro-Life Forum, and representatives of Faith Church had filed 9 petitions against the law. Among other things, they argued that it undermines marriage, discriminates against heterosexual people, violates morality, and harms children. The court disagreed on all counts.
The British Houses of Parliament in Westminster this week hosted its first same-gender civil partnership ceremony. Heterosexual marriage ceremonies have long been held in the chapel of the Palace of Westminster, but lesbian and gay civil partnerships cannot be celebrated in Parliament's Houses of Worship. MP and Labour Minister for Europe Chris Bryant wed his partner, Jared Cranny, in well-attended ceremonies on March 27th in the members' dining room of the House of Commons. Labour Party Deputy Leader Harriet Harman was among the wedding guests. Speaker of the House of Commons John Bercow, who led the effort to open Parliament to same-gender civil partnership ceremonies, was also there. Civil partnerships were legalized in the United Kingdom in 2004. They offer gays and lesbians most of the rights of marriage, except the name. More than 50,000 same-gender couples have since tied the knot.
One of the latest was the first civil partnership ceremony, also held on March 27th in one of the British Army's oldest regiments, the Household Cavalry. 23-year-old Lance Corporal James Wharton, who was the first openly gay enlistee to be featured on the cover of Soldier magazine last year, tied the knot with 21-year-old Air Steward Tom McCaffrey. Their civil partnership in London was followed by a reception at the Household Cavalry Mounted Regiment's Knightsbridge Barracks. Wharton told the London Independent that the entire regiment has been really supportive. According to Britain's Pink News, after a San Francisco honeymoon, the pair will live together in their new married quarters of the service family accommodation.
But for the second time in less than 3 years, a retired U.S. Presbyterian minister faces prosecution by her church for the same-gender wedding ceremony she performed in California. The Reverend Jane Spahr of San Francisco was prosecuted in early 2008 by the Presbyterian Church USA's highest tribunal, the Supreme Judicial Council, for officiating at same-gender union ceremonies. She was acquitted because they weren't legal marriages. The twist in the latest case is that Spahr is being charged with marrying 16 gay and lesbian couples during the 5-month period beginning in June 2008 after the California State Supreme Court made them legal and before voters overturned the High Court's marriage equality ruling in November. Church prosecutor Joanne Blackstone told the Santa Rosa Press Democrat this week that the distinction is immaterial. The marriages may well have been legal under state law, she said, but officiating at them was expressly prohibited by the same ruling that acquitted Spahr in 2008. Spahr's lawyer told reporters that it's unprecedented for the church to prosecute a minister for performing legal marriages.
It was a somewhat erratic week in Don't Ask, Don't Tell news. U.S. Army Secretary John McHugh first told reporters that he wouldn't push for the discharges of soldiers who in private conversations with him acknowledged being gay. He also said he believed Defense Secretary Robert Gates had placed a moratorium on discharges under the 17-year-old policy banning service by open lesbians and gays, while the Pentagon continued a study, expected to take the rest of the year, on how best to implement repeal. But a few days later, he said he had misspoken and warned lesbian and gay service members to stay closeted. He said he couldn't remember the specific soldiers who had come out to him, so their continued service remained safe, albeit in renewed silence.
The Obama administration's Department of Justice filed a brief this week defending the policy in a federal lawsuit challenging it, citing at length comments by then-Joint Chiefs Chair Colin Powell supporting it. Powell has since reversed his position and has publicly stated that he is in favor of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
And the top officer in the Marine Corps, Commandant General James Conway, who favors maintaining the policy, told Military.com late last week that he would not ask heterosexual soldiers to share rooms with openly gay soldiers if Don't Ask, Don't Tell is repealed.
Meanwhile, retired U.S. Marine General John Sheehan has apologized to the Dutch Defense Ministry for his inflammatory testimony at a Senate committee hearing in late March about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. He had claimed that allowing gay soldiers to serve was partially to blame for a massacre of Muslim men and boys by Serb soldiers in an area defended by Dutch peacekeepers during the Bosnian War. A group of retired openly gay Dutch soldiers had threatened to sue Sheehan for defamation.
In what New York's Gay City News headlined as Living La Vida Abierta, Puerto Rican-born pop music star Ricky Martin came out as gay in both English and Spanish in a March 29th posting on his website. I am proud to say that I am a fortunate homosexual man. I am very blessed to be who I am, Martin wrote at the end of the long post. He began by describing repeated advice from those close to him who cautioned that going public would ruin his career. Allowing myself to be seduced by fear and insecurity became a self-fulfilling prophecy of sabotage, he wrote. Today I take full responsibility for my decisions and my actions. If someone asked me today, Ricky, what are you afraid of? He continued. I would answer, the blood that runs through the streets of countries at war, child slavery, terrorism, the cynicism of some people in positions of power, the misinterpretation of faith. But fear of my truth, not at all. On the contrary, it fills me with strength and courage. Referring to his two children, born 2 years ago through surrogacy, he wrote, to keep living as I did up until today would be to indirectly diminish the glow that my kids were born with. Enough is enough. Herrera y Lozano wrote on the Two Spirits One blog site that perhaps for jaded queens living in the urban U.S., the oversaturation of gayness in the media has deemed Ricky insignificant and worthy of our dismissal. But for that frightened and confused 12-year-old in rural Chihuahua, it's monumental.
And Anna Paquin, who stars in the HBO TV series True Blood, came out as bisexual this week in a public service announcement she recorded for the Give a Damn campaign. That's a project of the True Colors Fund, founded by pop singer Cyndi Lauper, to raise money for LGBT rights. I'm Anna Paquin. I'm bisexual, and I give a damn, the actress reportedly said in her PSA. The 27-year-old actress, who won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in The Piano when she was just 11 years old, is engaged to her True Blood co-star, Stephen Moyer. Other celebrities taking part in the Give a Damn campaign include Whoopi Goldberg, Elton John, Cynthia Nixon, Sharon and Kelly Osbourne, Clay Aiken, and Wanda Sykes. Faith Cheltenham, vice president of Binet USA, welcomed Paquin to the publicly bi world in an open letter. Bi people do exist, and you have no idea how many people will be gladdened by your message and your courage, she wrote. She extended an early invitation to Paquin to her organization's 20th anniversary party during the annual Creating Change Conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota in February, writing that, Binet USA would love to have you and your fiancé as special guests.
And finally, the Oklahoma Senate has proven that lawmakers don't always study the bills they're voting for. Unintended consequences resulted this week from an effort to exempt the state from LGBT-related provisions of federal hate crimes law. No one reported the story better than news commentator Keith Olbermann on the March 30th edition of his popular MSNBC Countdown program. The winner of his Worst Persons in the World segment that night was the legislator who sponsored the bill.
Oklahoma State Senator Steve Russell. 2 weeks ago, that body passed his horrific, bigoted bill designed to reduce protections for gays by enabling Oklahoma law enforcement agencies to ignore the broader definition of hate crimes passed by the U.S. Congress a year ago in the Matthew Shepard Act on the grounds that it denied Oklahoma churches the right to preach against homosexuality. The Oklahoma bill permits prosecutors to ignore Title 18 U.S. Code Section 245. Except the protections for gays are not in Title 18 U.S. Code Section 245. They are in Title 18 U.S. Code Section 249. So what did Oklahoma nullify when it said it attacked Title 18 U.S. Code Section 245? Title 18 U.S. Code Section 245 protects people against hate crimes based on, quote, race, color, religion, or national origin. So the religious nuts in Oklahoma who tried to strip the rights from gays wound up stripping the rights from the religious nuts in Oklahoma.
Now that the Oklahoma Senate's bonehead move has come to light, it's highly unlikely that the measure will even get a vote in the state house. As Equality Oklahoma President Toby Jenkins told The Advocate, people are a little embarrassed that it got this far.
That's NewsWrap for the week ending April 3rd, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's NewsWrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
Science of Spirituality Houston Branch is conducting free meditation classes on the physical, mental, and spiritual benefits of meditation. This is a two-part series held the last two Sundays of every month from April to July. Part one covers the basics of meditation, stilling the body, calming the mind, and learning to focus. Part two covers advanced meditation techniques and how to get the most out of your meditation. The classes are from noon to 1:30 p.m. in room 213 of Robertson Hall at the University of St. Thomas, 3800 Montrose Boulevard, Houston, Texas. For more information, visit HoustonSOS.org. This has been KPFT Houston, 90.1 on your dial.
Voices Breaking Boundaries presents acclaimed rock star, artist, and writer Patti Smith reading from her new memoir, Just Kids, and performing music on Monday, April 19th, 7 p.m. at the Cullen Performance Hall, University of Houston. Books will be for sale at the event. For pre-sign and preferred seating, purchase tickets through Brazos Bookstore. The evening is sponsored by UH Cynthia Woods Center for the Arts and co-sponsored by KPFT, Brazos Bookstore, Houston Indie Media, Houston Institute for Culture, and many U of H departments. Don't miss Patti Smith in Houston. Bring your friends and join us for an inspiring evening of music, literature, and rich discussion. Go to vbbarts.org or call 713-524-7821 for more information.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
If you are political at all and involved in the gay political scene, you know of EMDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and you know that things have been going on a national level. But there is a local effort tomorrow to push EMDA through. And in the studio tonight, we have Daniel Williams, who is with which organization?
Equality Across America Houston.
So it's a local chapter of
chapter of a national organization, yes.
So what's going on tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow evening we have a rally in support of an inclusive Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and the rally is actually going to be held outside of Senator John Cornyn's office at 6 p.m. The address for the office is 5300 Memorial Drive.
Now, when you say inclusive, what do you mean by that?
Well, there's a long history on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. The current version was first introduced in 1995. 1994, and many of the versions that have been introduced over the years only cover sexual orientation and don't cover gender identity and expression. So there's been a huge effort on the part of a number of national organizations to create a community consensus that we are only interested in an Employment Non-Discrimination Act that covers the transgender community.
So the T in GLBT, so to speak.
Right.
So tomorrow there's going to be a... What kind of rally or protest is it going to be?
Rally. We will be along the sidewalk in front of the senator's office, which is on Memorial Drive, so there will be a lot of traffic going by. And the idea is to create a critical mass in the community and to give people an opportunity to really speak up. Now, if people can't attend, and also I hope the ones who do attend, they should call both their senators and their House members and tell them to support the legislation. We're very fortunate. Two of our local Houston congresspeople are actually co-sponsors of the bill, Sheila Jackson Lee and Al Green.
Whoop, whoop.
But you can always call and thank them. That's always nice because I'm sure they're getting calls not thanking them. But go to any search engine, type in who represents me, call your representatives, call your senators, who we all have the same senators, Gabe Bailey Hutchinson and John Cornyn, and say, support the Employment Non-Discrimination Act.
And so where do they stand currently? Do you have any idea where they would vote right now?
Based on previous statements, I would not expect Cornyn and Hutchinson to support the bill. And the bill currently is still in the House. We haven't gotten it over to the Senate yet, so it's important that we also concentrate on our House members. But the thing I always tell people, and I'm a former legislative aide, it is always a good idea to call people who disagree with you. You're not likely to change their mind, but what you can do is to encourage them not to be vocal in their opposition, because a representative who has a number of people in their district who disagree with them is not going to be on the front page talking about the issue.
Absolutely, because they have to get reelected.
They have to get reelected, exactly. So even if you don't think that you're going to be able to change the mind of an elected representative, call them anyway. It does make a difference in how they approach the issue.
So in tomorrow's event, should people bring signs?
Yes.
Should they dress up in some crazy attire to bring attention, or what should they do?
Please bring signs. Crazy attire is always fun. The one thing I would say on signs, be sure that they are not on any kind of pole. The city of Houston has some ordinances that involve signs on poles because they could apparently be used as weapons. I'm not sure what that's about.
We don't want to make the news for bad signs. We want to
exactly
make the news for progressive change in our...
Exactly. And sign ideas could include no one should be fired because they're gay. Support non-discrimination. My rule of thumb on signs, I always say it's a 20-20 rule. It needs to be read from 20 feet away by someone who's going 20 miles an hour.
Well, if they're on Memorial, they're driving a lot faster than 20.
I don't own that much cardboard for signs, so, you know.
Yeah. Now, how many people do you hope to get? What would be a magic number?
If we get more than 100, I will be extremely satisfied.
Oh, my God. With a city this large, we should be able to get...
Oh, we should be able to get thousands, but the reality of the situation is, unfortunately, there aren't that many people who are willing to make themselves slightly uncomfortable to support good legislation.
So, in that fact, maybe in the hope one day they won't be fired for being GOBT.
Right. And you know, we're very fortunate here in Houston. Actually, our mayor just signed an order that where city employees are now covered both on sexual orientation and gender identity and expression. But that doesn't cover anyone who doesn't work for the city.
Yes, but... Thank you, Mayor Parker.
Thank you, Mayor Parker. It's a huge step forward, and it's everything that she can do. We need to help get this the rest of the way.
So to get discrimination out of the law against GOBTs.
Right. And currently there are 29 states that have some form of law that covers this. Now, only 12 of those have fully inclusive legislation. So only 12 states protect GBLT people from being fired or not hired because of their sexual orientation or gender identity.
Now tell me, if someone is listening and they want to, they're going to meet before?
We will meet at the site. Again, it's 5300 Memorial Drive at 6:30 p.m.
Now, do you know the cross street in case our listeners?
That's Shepherd and Memorial.
Shepherd and Memorial.
It's just east of Shepherd, yes.
Just east of, right by.
I'm sorry, just west of Shepherd.
Just west of Shepherd and Memorial.
And this is actually being done in coordination with efforts in Dallas, Austin, and San Antonio, all tomorrow on the 6th. And the reason we're doing this on the 6th, you may recall last month there were four people who were arrested in Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office, who they took over the office and said, we're not leaving until you schedule this bill for a vote, and that's the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Their hearing is actually tomorrow.
Ah.
So we are using that opportunity to both support those efforts and to call on the entire community to speak out to elected representatives and say, this is something that is really important to us. There have been efforts since 1974. 1974 was the first time any legislation was filed to protect people from workplace discrimination. Why isn't this should be done by now? And if everyone in the community actually spoke up and called their representatives, it would be done.
Now, if I'm out there listening and I don't know my representative, you said to look, is there like a certain website or do they just do a Google search?
Go to any search engine and type in who represents me. Now, if you live in Texas, your state senators are John Cornyn and Kay Bailey Hutchinson. Your House member is going to differ depending on where you live.
There's a whole bunch in this area.
There's a whole bunch in this area.
Yes, because we're an urban center. And mine is Sheila Jackson Lee, who is a diva.
Oh, Sheila Jackson Lee's fabulous. She is a co-sponsor of this bill. And actually, this bill has a lot of bipartisan support. There are 198 co-sponsors of the House version. Seven of those are actually from Texas. And those include Sheila Jackson Lee and Al Green here in the Houston area. But six of the co-sponsors of this bill are Republicans.
That's crazy.
There is, well, sane people realize that there's no reason that someone should ever not have a job or should lose their job because of their sexual orientation or gender identity and expression.
Now, you mentioned that this rally is put on by Equality Across America, the Houston branch.
Yes, there are.
Tell us about that organization for people that may be interested.
There are actually a number of organizations that are co-sponsoring this. Equality Across America, Houston, which you mentioned, the Lone Star College, CyFair, GLBTA, the Transgender Foundation of America, Get Equal, and the Transgender Unity Committee are all co-sponsoring this event. But let me talk to you about EAA Houston. EAA Houston is a grassroots activist organization that is basically trying to give anyone who wants to get involved but can't figure out how an opportunity to step in. You don't have to have money, you don't have to have experience, you don't have to have ever done anything, just show up at meetings. We meet every other week at the HCC Central Campus. The next meeting is going to be on the 19th at 7 p.m. That's at 1300 Holman Street in room 116 of the Learning Annex. We're very fortunate to be hosted there. And just show up. And that's, people are always wondering, how do you get involved? You show up. That's how you get involved. You don't have to know anything. You don't have to have any experience. You don't have to be rich. Just show up.
And just have the desire to make a change.
Have the desire to make a change. And we have people who are involved with the organization who have been in the fight for 30 years. We have people who have just got involved in the last few months. We have so much experience within the group. We can teach you how to do anything you need to do, and hopefully you can teach us how to do some things too.
Yes, and you know, the struggle is nowhere near being complete. We need the next generation to step up and kind of fight for our rights.
We need the past generation to continue standing up. Let's not put everything on the young people.
I agree. But I think ENDA, Do you think that we could pass it in the near future?
There is no reason why it should not pass this session. The only way it won't pass is if people don't fight for it. And that's the key. They're expected to have the votes in the House, but it has to come for a vote. And pressure needs to continue to be put on. We have to get it through the House, and then we have to get it through the Senate. And President Obama has promised to sign it if it hits his desk, but it's got to hit his desk first, which is why it's so important that people contact their elected officials. And I'm a former legislative aide. People get intimidated by the idea of contacting their elected officials. Trust me, the person on the other side of the phone is not going to fight you on the issue. They're not going to expect you to know everything. Their job is to listen to constituents and to convey that information to the elected official. They honestly want to hear from you. Even if the elected official disagrees with your position, the legislative aide on the other side of the phone wants to hear from you. Call them.
Or better yet, show up at their office.
Show up at their office, which is what we'll be doing tomorrow night at John Cornyn's office, 6:30 at 5300 Memorial Drive.
And bring your signs.
Bring your signs. Bring your cell phones. We'll actually be calling all of the area offices while we're there.
So the goal is more than 100 people, and I know we can pull that together.
Oh, we can certainly pull that together.
Let's get 500 people there.
If we get 500 people, I'll buy you a beer.
Well, I challenge the listeners of Queer Voices and the reach of our voice. Get out, get active. Tomorrow is the rally, 6:30
6:30 at 5300 Memorial Drive. Get Brian a beer. If we hit over 500, I'll treat Brian.
There you go. Now, tell us the website one more time.
We actually don't have a website, but for more information, you can email us at eaahouston@gmail.com. You can also call us at 832-687-5991. Again, the email is eaahouston@gmail.com. The phone number is 832-687-5991.
We've been talking to Daniel Williams of Equality Across America about tomorrow's rally for INDA inclusion. And is there anything else we want our listeners to know about, Daniel?
Well, I would encourage you, again, please call your elected representatives, and please join us at our next meeting on April 19th at 1300 Holman Street, room 116 of the Learning Annex at HCC Central Campus.
So you heard it here. Get involved. Let's make a change. We can do it starting tomorrow.
There's no wrong way to be an activist.
There you go. This is Queer Voices. Thank you.
Is it any wonder that I'm making for you in a crowded room? We've been undercover, and it's making me sick to have to bury it. You into me accidentally. We'll be right back.
this year. That was Christy Stremmel. The name of the song, Best Kiss, unfortunately, it's not released yet. That was a special online release on a private label that J.D. Doyle got for us. This is Queer Voices.
Well, this interview may sound like we did it in the past, but it's in the present.
It's deja vu all over again.
Yes. Deborah Bell, who was a very integral part of this program.
And see how he says that word was?
Was. Well, that's was. And before that, Lesbian and Gay Voices. And before that, you were part of Wildenstein, too, at one point.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, boy, it's like three generations.
Oh, gosh. That's because we're getting older.
I'm getting
and
very old.
Isn't that good, though, that we are?
That we're still here, yes.
We're still
Stirring up the... and sometimes you need to do that.
Yes.
But Deborah is now the editor of Gem, Montrose Gem. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, first of all, that's gem, like in a gemstone, like in a diamond.
Gem.
Yeah, it's not like a place you go work out. Although I do. I seem to work out a lot there. The paper was started about 5 years ago by Henry McClure, and Henry has been behind the beginnings of almost every GLBT publication that has started in Houston except Outsmart.
And I read somewhere that at one point one of his publications was a daily.
I don't know about that.
I thought I read that somewhere. It was the only one in the country ever.
He has a very interesting history.
Yes.
He decided to move on, and he's now doing a thing called the Montrose Star, which was a name he had before of a publication. So the current publisher, owner of the Gem, wants to see it continue, but also wants to see it change and grow. And that's where I come in, because as you know, at one time I was the editor of the Houston Voice.
Which Henry was also associated with.
At one time before, yes. I came along. He starts it and then I finish it. No, and then I come in. And of course, what I bring to this is not only the journalism that I've done with KPFT, but also by being organizationally involved in the National Organization for Women, which I'm no longer involved in.
I know the feeling.
Because, you know, sometimes you're involved in things and then you move
things
on.
Things happen.
Yes. And
sometimes
reason,
you're asked to leave.
And sometimes you just...
Sometimes the door's locked on you.
And sometimes you
and
just...
And I'm talking about my own personal experience,
yes,
not you.
Yes, but sometimes you just have to refocus, because otherwise you do get burned out,
yes.
And are used up. My focus as an activist and also as someone who's interested in our cultural life as an LGBT population is all coming to play with this. So, one, I'm getting more community writers, which is exciting, including some people that have written in the past, like Bill O'Rourke and Andrew Edmondson, and a new young man named Aaron Coward, who is from Central Texas. And he wrote a screenplay as part of a contest for Queer as Folk, and his script won.
Really?
That's right. And so he just sent me something today that just blew me away. And so it'll be in the next issue, which will be out Thursday.
So now this publication's coming out how often?
It comes out every 2 weeks. And so it... Thursday will be, it came out the 26th. We have a Friday publication date, but it's usually out the day before. One thing, we're out on time, and we're more timely. Mm-hmm. I mean, Outsmart, I love it. It's an excellent publication.
And they write some good articles, but it's not really news. It is
right. More
of a reflection.
And of course, we know there's a demise in the daily newspapers. But you go to almost any restaurant or the lobby of KPFT or any number of other places, and you're going to see stack after stack of niche market publications, whether it's Paper City, whether it's the Houston Press, whether it's the OO2,
the Free Press,
the Leader, the Senior News. There's all these free publications out there. So and then the community papers, such as the Heights Tribune and the West University Examiner, and some of the ones that are targeted to the Black community, to the Hispanic community, etc. So in the past the gym was something that was mainly focused on the bar culture and was distributed in the bars and feature ads from the bars. We would like to be inclusive of that. We will still keep our LGBT Montrose focus, although I do hope to see a name change. We didn't want to do it all at once, but I think the name is kind of confusing. Of course, the idea is a diamond is when the light shines through it, it casts all the colors of the rainbow,
okay,
the full spectrum of the rainbow. And so that's what our little logo is. I'm showing it on the radio. Here you can see this lovely diamond with the rainbow colors. One, we can give more up-to-date news, maybe some of the things that people, yes, a lot of us are online, but a lot of us aren't. A lot of us aren't out at the bars. We want to be the kind of paper that can be in coffee shops, that can be in restaurants, that can be in the library.
Are you also planning to do an online presence?
We will. We have the same website. It's woefully outdated. We're aware of that, and we will certainly, once we have everything in place, have an updated website, hopefully a better website. Mainly we want this publication that people can pick up. I still, you know, it was like, I knew when I was living outside of Houston, you know, because I was up in Central Texas taking care of my mom before she passed away, and then I was helping my sister with some stuff. And I came back because I was given this opportunity, and turn on that radio, and I hear the music that I'm always teasing Glenn about, the startup music to Queer Voices, and it's just different than listening to it online. You know?
I can say the same thing about the Chronicle.
Right,
I still get the Chronicle. Because, and of course, we're older people, so we've been used to that, and there's things...
I've been reading the Chronicle since I was 16, so that's
right.
46 years.
And back then, it was not a very good newspaper.
Yeah. Well, to me, having grown up in Lubbock, it was incredible.
Better.
No, but I grew up in a family that you read the newspaper, And so it's the same thing, that tactile of holding it. I don't know if I can ever do Kindle or, you know, read
the
a
iPad.
Book. Yeah, I know. I want an iPad now. I really do. But the free advertisement for Apple. But
like they need it.
But yeah. But to hold the paper and to flip through it and to be able to go back to it and oh yeah, when is that thing? Oh yeah, Kindred Spirits is having that golf tournament, the foundation, it's a fundraiser, and here's the date right here in front of me. I don't have to go look it up. A lot of people don't spend the time to go find out what's going on in their community. You don't have time.
Well, and the reality is, and I do read the Chronicle online also because it's a little bit more up to date, but there's such a thing about putting all the social events, and the news is sort of buried down much further. But when you go through the paper, you know where the local section is.
Right, right. And we currently do have a Hollywood column and horoscopes. I don't know how people really feel about those, if they really want that. Of course, our lead article for this Friday will be about the mayor's executive order of non-discrimination and inclusive of the transgendered and gender identity population.
Which only affects city employees at city facilities.
Being a city employee, you... But that's true. But it sets a precedence for when the head of a city says this is the right and fair thing to do, and as Anise said, it's, you know, we're really putting into law what is we've been practicing, because Houston has been, at least on the city level, a pretty liberal, open, even some of the conservatives that are on city council at least are working on behalf of the city.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not like in some of these other things where they're all just about whatever their issues are. I have a feature. Everybody's hearing about Patti Smith, where we're hoping, you know, I'm not going to say she'll be here on Queer Voices next week. She will be on KPFT the same day she's in town, which is April 19th. And that's really exciting. We have a weekend coming up that has Tret Fury, one of JD and mine, favorite artists. She's going to be here on Friday the 23rd for a house concert. Funny woman Vicky Shaw, you know, from Texas. She's going to be at the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. I can't remember the right name of it because they changed it around. Along with Jeannie McNulty, who is they're both considered two of the top 10 funniest lesbians. They didn't count me in that. You know, they had to be fair to the other ones. And then there's a concert on that Sunday as well. So it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you don't even find out about these things sometimes until the last minute.
Right.
And so how are people going to know that things like that are coming up? Because a lot of events like that don't get the attention that they deserve. So, and certainly things like we don't know yet who the Grand Marshal for Pride this year will be, because that's not going to be announced till Thursday, and so we will have already gone to press, but we'll have that information in 2 weeks. You know, it'll be printed and in there.
But that is one of the things a newspaper can offer, is that you go to bed like, what, Tuesday evening or Monday evening? And then
I don't go, one night I didn't go to bed at all, you know. That's why, it's like I say, it's with the gremlins. They went in there and changed things after I had done the paper. But the reality was I was sleep deprived, and I didn't know how to do this design program. I mean, I learned, the guy at the publishing company said, most people have to spend about a week learning this. And I had like 3 hours. So, you know, I keep telling people, bear with me. So we want to keep people in mind of what's going on in the community, what the community concerns are, what they want to read about, their organizations, their events. I think there's some really exciting things. There's, you know, of course, gay theater I love, so we have some of that. And we can be contacted. The best way is Montrose Gem, G-E-M, @yahoo.com or at 713-523-2828. We need photographers. We need some ad salespeople. Right now I pretty much have it covered as far as writers, but you know, if someone has something they want to say, then I certainly will give it consideration. I'm really excited about it and looking forward to the paper growing and expanding. If it becomes the kind of paper that we want it to be, it'll be somewhat like the Dallas Voice is now, which if you haven't seen it in a while, it's kind of like the size of the Houston Press.
Well, it is pretty incredible, and the Dallas Voice is a great paper, and they also have an incredible online presence.
They do.
We've had John Wright on a couple of times in the past few years talking about some of the issues. You know, the Southern Voice and the
Washington Blade and the New York Blade and the Houston Voice all were owned by Window Media, and they went bankrupt.
Right.
And closed.
And supposedly the story was that the Atlanta paper and the Washington paper were actually profitable. It's just that, how do I say this in the right way? Apparently somebody was just taking a little bit too much money out of the pot. Not that that was illegal, but basically they bankrupt the, you know,
everybody else.
Yes. And yeah. The Houston, unfortunately, they never put the resources in Houston to build up the Houston Voice, which is, you know, we are probably the largest city not to have a weekly GLBT newspaper.
Right. And so there are, you know, some excellent papers out there. There's a good online presence if people want to have the time to sit there and search the web and to find out. I mean, you go to the web and you kind of see what is the news all over the world, which is great. But we're really keep like KPFT, like local Queer Voices, yes. That local perspective, what's going on with our community. And when I say our community, I mean lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, allied, and open-minded, liberal, free-thinking people, the urban and the suburbanites as well, who care about our culture and who are comfortable with it and who know that by advertising in a paper like this, they're targeting a clientele that, you know, we think about where we put our money. Just like everybody else, we like to support people that we feel are supportive of us. And we have to watch our dollars in this economy, you know, just like everyone else.
Exactly.
And so, that's what's going on with me as far as I'm back in Houston. I have some other things that I'll be printing about in the Montrose Gym, letting you know about. And I'm excited that Summer has joined Queer Voices. I'm sorry that Jennifer wasn't here and I'm sorry that she feels bad. And I'm sorry that Brian had to rush out. I barely got a hug from him, but it's really good to see the gang.
We're still here, yeah, you know. We're still queer and we're still here.
Yeah, and I hope to... maybe.
Hey, I gave you a peck on the cheek.
Yeah, you kind of did. I didn't ask for one of those chest bump things you do with Jennifer, though. That's beyond me. But we are available in the KPFT lobby, the Montrose Gym. You can pick up a copy there. And in, for sure, the Michael's Outpost and the Montrose Counseling Center, most of the bars around town and in Galveston. There's 5 gay bars in Galveston. Did you know that? And
any chances?
I imagine. I don't... you know... They don't have smoking anymore, so I can go to bars, but
yes.
I tend not to for some reason, so I don't know.
Deborah, maybe you can say it. What happened to Mary's?
Mary's closed.
Yeah.
Because? Because.
Just because, okay.
Because the Wonderful Witch, I'm not sure of all the details, it's just that it has nothing to do with the Montrose Gym, and so I don't even want to talk about it. No. It's sad. I heard that at Rich's they did a salute to Mary's, and they came out and talked about our dear friend that's now deceased and all that. But, you know, that's another example of how things change. And so we at the gym, we plan to change and grow and expand and... hopefully, I'll get to visit with you guys again, you guys and guys.
And, well, Deborah, thanks for joining us, and I'm sure you'll be back occasionally.
I'm coming back,
you're
Jack.
You're coming back?
I told Glenn, he can't stop me.
Well, maybe Ray Hill could close that door and, you know, try to keep you out of the studio
like I did
to him one time.
Okay, thank you, Ray. Well, love Ray. God, don't you love Ray.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Just who does she think she is? A transgender lesbian filmmaker discovered that it wasn't what other people thought she was. And a parody songwriter is not a beloved British nanny. But first, a Kiwi politician proved that she wasn't just another disenfranchised sex worker.
Georgina and her changed life, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. George Bertrand was born in 1957 in New Zealand. Shortly after leaving school, he discovered the gay scene, and at age 17, identified as transgender. Taking the name Georgina Beyer, she became a stripper and sex worker. After changing careers into acting, sexual reassignment surgery transformed her life. She said it was, quote, the most significant and greatest achievement of my life. Subsequently, Georgina took an interest in local politics. She was elected to the local school board, and then to mayor of Carterton in 1995, making her the world's first openly transsexual mayor. Widely admired for her intelligence and wit, she surprised political experts when she won election to New Zealand's parliament in 1999, another first on the world stage. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Are you signed up for our emailed This Way Out updates? We send them out every few weeks, briefly reviewing recent and previewing upcoming programming and dishing some behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show. We also send out weekly email messages describing the specific content of each program. All you have to do to receive one or both of these messages is email tworadio@aol.com. And be assured that we don't share or sell your email address or anything about you to anyone else, and we never will. Again, to receive the occasional This Way Out updates or our weekly program information messages, ask for one or both by name when you email tworadio@aol.com. That's tworadio@aol.com.
You've heard that truth is stranger than fiction. Well, the old adage has never been more apt than in the case of Prodigal Sons, a documentary that swept the Film Festival Awards last year. The movie is now in theatrical release across the United States. This Way Out's Steve Pride follows the filmmaker into her maze of unforeseeable twists and relative surprises.
Leaping from Montana to San Francisco to Croatia, Kimberly Reed's gripping documentary, Prodigal Sons, is filled with revelations. A high school quarterback becomes a transgendered lesbian filmmaker, and her mentally unstable adopted brother discovers he's the grandchild of Hollywood royalty. But the documentary is really not about either of those things. Not really.
Hello, this is Kimberly Reed, director and producer of a film called Prodigal Sons.
And what is Prodigal Sons about?
It's just about a family like any other family. It's about sibling relationships. It's about sibling rivalries. Underneath all of it is really about identity. And it's about who we are, who we think we are. And then when that changes, how do we fit back into our families? How does that change the relationships around us? In Prodigal Sons, my brother and I are both in a situation where our identity changes a remarkable amount. I mean, I'm transgender. I have had a shift in my identity, how I identify, how I self-identify, how other people see me. My brother Mark is adopted, and he finds out in this kind of stunning revelation in the film that he is related to some of the biggest names in classic 40s Hollywood cinema.
Mark's mother was the daughter of film goddess Rita Hayworth and the genius who spoke the most famous word in all of movie history.
Rosebud.
Orson Welles.
Maybe the biggest surprise is that everybody else around my brother Mark expected this news to change him, and to change him in a particular way, and to give him this sort of Disney fairy tale ending that would somehow magically transform everything and give him a sense of identity. But actually, this news leads to a lot of unexpected results. It was actually one of the harder things for him to wrap his head around. The other thing about that news is that going into this film, I was the filmmaker. I was the one who worshipped all this classic Hollywood cinema, especially Mark's grandfather. And my brother and I had kind of a perfect storm of a sibling rivalry. He was a year older than me, and he was held back. So we were in the same class growing up in a small town in Montana, right? So we're extremely close. We have a lot of the same friends. We drive to school together every day and go to some of the same classes. And a lot of things come easily to me, school and sports, and they don't to Mark. And that creates an even stronger rivalry between the two of us. Mark is adopted. I'm not. My younger brother isn't. You know, we're tall and blonde. So there was a lot of competition, a lot of rivalry from his side. And what happens when this news comes out about who Mark is related to, Mark has spent his entire life being envious of my genes and the fact that our parents are my birth parents and they're not his birth parents. He's very envious of that. So for the first time, when Mark finds out this news about who he's related to, I become envious of his genes. And this sort of amazing twist happens where things kind of level out between the two of us, and we both kind of understand what it's like to be on the other side of the equation.
But the discovery of his famous lineage and even his brother's gender transition did little to lessen Mark's unbridled sibling jealousy.
Just because I wasn't a quarterback and didn't get straight A's and wasn't the president's student body, I was more popular than him. I was good looking, I had top-notch chicks.
I think Mark probably had some misdiagnosed learning disabilities when he was growing up. And then when he was 21, he was in a car accident and he had a head injury. For about almost five years, we thought that nothing was going to happen. And then out of nowhere, Mark develops symptoms in the form of grand mal seizures. But the real effect that it has in our family is that since Mark's head injury, his ability to control his impulses is just gone. I mean, there's really not much of a lid on that, and he has a difficult time controlling himself. And some of those episodes are caught in the film, and it can be a very unpredictable, scary thing because you're not sure where things are going to go.
Okay.
Can I ask you, where is Mark now?
He's at the jail. When we come to a call where family members are involved, it has nothing to do with the family members. It has to do with the state. I felt that you guys had enough fear that he violated Montana law.
Is there any way that he could be taken to Warm Springs for an evaluation?
One of the great ironies of this film is that Mark's jealousy was directed toward a brother that really never existed. Kimberly worked hard at being a boy, but it was never more than a facade.
The kind of sense of peace or comfort that I have since my transition has to do with not feeling like I need to prove that to anyone. Another way to look at that is that in one of the interviews that we were doing with a friend from high school, he referred kind of loosely to the fact that football was fun. That, you know, even if you're losing, it's still fun to play. And that really threw me for a loop. It really made me question because I realized that all of those years, I wasn't doing it to have fun. I mean, it wasn't fun. You're not supposed to have fun doing that. You do it to prove all these things to everybody else and to yourself. And for me, it was all about proving my masculinity, my capability, that if I could be good at the somewhat arbitrary rules for this game that everybody seemed to pay a lot of attention to, then that would really prove to me and to everybody else that I was really normal, that I was male, that I wasn't so different. You know, I was trying to prove it to a lot of other people, and I think more than anyone else, trying to prove it to myself.
And what has her journey taught her?
Who you think you are is different than who everybody else thinks you are. And families kind of exacerbate that quite a bit because families know you very intimately and they know you when you're young. And then if you leave and you try to reinvent yourself one way or another, they're the ones who always remember that old version. And they're the ones who sometimes bring it back and won't let you forget. And that causes a lot of friction. But I think that, especially in the LGBT community, a lot of us leave and do some reinventing and then have a harder time kind of reincorporating because we went to the big city and came out, or we, you know, had this chapter of our lives where we really had to separate ourselves from this complicated history. So reintegrating that in the future, if you do it, and not everybody has to do it, by the way, causes a lot of friction. But I think that that sense of reinventing yourself, it happens no matter who you are.
One of the great things about Prodigal Sons is the random, stranger-than-fiction nature of the ride.
There's a quote that I love. It's actually from Orson Welles, and he said, "Don't give them what they ask for. give them what they never thought was possible. We were talking earlier about how surprising life is, and I think that storytelling that has those surprises built into it is interesting to us because to a certain extent it replicates life. You know, it's like, I never thought I'd have to be dealing with that, and look, I'm dealing with that now. And in the same way that it's surprising that in high school I was voted most likely to succeed, and this is probably the last thing that anybody ever would have imagined, in the same way, my brother Mark, in his quest to find a sense of identity and a sense of meaning through sharing his story with others, that has happened now, despite all of the difficulty in getting there. I think that's pretty amazing, too.
If you could have found out that Rosebud meant, I bet that would have explained everything.
No, I don't think so. No. Mr. Kane was a man who got everything he wanted and then lost it. Maybe Rosebud was something he couldn't get or something he lost. Anyway, it wouldn't have explained anything. I don't think any word can explain a man's life. No, I guess Rosebud is just a piece in a jigsaw puzzle. A missing piece.
This has been a conversation with filmmaker Kimberly Reed. Prodigal Sons is being distributed in the U.S. by First Run Features. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Finally this week, sort of keeping to the movie theme, some lyrical words of wisdom from a woman much like the one you wish had been your nanny.
Stupid callous homophobic hateful legislation, even though they wrap it up in laws to save our nation. How can it be moral to condone discrimination? Stupid callous homophobic hateful legislation. I knew a lovely couple once named Benjamin and Lyle. The state of California stopped them marching down the aisle. Laws were passed as frightening as films by Roger Corman, thanks to millions funneled here by many a rich Mormon. Stupid, callous, homophobic, hateful legislation. Wedlock can be limited to one orientation. It's the ones who outlaw love who suffer. Politicians fight for marriage, claiming eagles spoil it. Senators like Larry Craig, whose toes tapped in the toilet. Congressman Mark Foley, known for moralizing the rages. Was so straight until they caught him trying to turn his pages. Demonstrate this right-wing desperation. Same-sex marriage is a choice, it's not an obligation. Doesn't mean that next we'll all elope with a Dalmatian. Stupid, callous, homophobic, hateful legislation.
That Shelley Goldstein YouTube hit has become a viral video sensation, and she tells us that it's even been translated into French. Très bon. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson, Clive Barker, Sherry Lunn, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Shelley Goldstein performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the text of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WHRW Binghamton, New York, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, KBRP, Bisbee, Arizona, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Happy birthday to us. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT. Listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Family are invited to Bluegrass by the Tracks at the Houston Railroad Museum on Saturday, April 10th from noon to 6. Yes, Houston does have a railroad museum with a fine collection of vintage rail equipment in a wooded setting in Northeast Houston. And on April 10th, the Lone Star Bluegrass Band, Digger Davis, Tombstone, and other musical groups will entertain all afternoon to benefit the museum. There will be food, fun, museum tours, and toys for the kids. And a rail fair with a model railroad flea market. Old trains, bluegrass music. It doesn't get any better than that. Saturday, April 10th, noon to 6 p.m. at the Houston Railroad Museum, located at 7390 Mesa Road. You can find additional information on the museum at HoustonRRMuseum.org. This is KPFT Houston.
This fall, KPFT will hold an election to seat delegates on the local station board. There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's five local station boards. That election may seem like a long way away, but it will be here before you know it. Why not consider participating in KPFT as a member of our board? Board delegates are elected to bring diverse grassroots voices from the community into the dialogue between the community and the station. Candidates are chosen in both listener and staff pools. To be a listener candidate, you can contribute at least $25 to a foundation radio station. If you are a KPFT volunteer and want to be considered as a staff candidate, you must complete 30 or more verifiable volunteer hours at a foundation radio station. Pacifica's principles inspire us to strive for diversity, and we encourage members of our diverse communities to consider being a part of this board. This is KPFT, Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.